Greetings, and welcome to CatastropheCast.com. My name is Walter, and today we're actually going to talk about a catastrophe that happened exactly 41 years ago from the day of this recording, which is December 20th, 2013. And that disaster is the runway collision of Delta Airlines Flight 954 and North Central Airlines Flight 575. So let's set up the scene. It was a crisp evening, about 35 degrees, and really, really foggy in Chicago, especially at Chicago O'Hare. So it was just before Christmas. Delta Flight 954 had just landed at 5:55 p.m., coming in from Tampa, Florida. It was a Corvair 880 with 86 passengers and 7 crew. Now, at the same time, North Central Flight 575, which was a DC-9 with 41 passengers and 4 crew, they were getting ready to take off. They had left the gate, taxiing out, getting ready to go to Madison, Wisconsin, and then on to Duluth, Minnesota. Delta had landed on runway 14 left, and unfortunately, here's the start of where everything basically went wrong. First, air traffic control warned Delta that 14 left and 14 right, those two runways, were being used for departures. But they didn't warn them that runway 27 left was also being used for departures. Then, when Delta contacted air traffic control to let them know they were taxiing, they said that they were crossing the north-south bridge, which connected runway 14 left to the passenger terminals. Now, I know this may be a little hard to visualize, so what I'm going to do is put up a map on catastrophecast.com so you can actually see where all the runways are and how runway 14 left and the north-south bridge, which was where Delta was at the time, how they actually connect up to runway 27 left. So the bad thing, when Delta told ATC where they were, ATC actually didn't understand. They thought that Delta was in a different spot on the airport. Specifically, ATC said they didn't understand or had missed Delta's reference to the north-south bridge. They did not know that they were in that area. And because visibility was so bad, there's a little conflicting information here. There's some information says that visibility was, and actually it's the NTSB air crash investigation said that visibility was a quarter mile. And there's also other references that say that visibility was only 250 feet. I mean, that's, you know, quarter mile is just over 1,000 feet. And so there's a big difference there, but whatever it is, whatever the case was at that specific moment, ATC couldn't actually see Delta Flight 954. So because they couldn't see them and because they didn't hear the phrase inside the bridge, which was that north-south bridge connection, which was where, you know, Delta said that they were, air traffic control actually thought that the flight was well far back from where it actually was. So ATC told Delta to hold at a certain spot, but that spot was actually behind where the Delta plane was at the time. The other bad thing is Delta actually never questioned that. The pilot and co-pilot of Flight 954, you know, they didn't come back and say, hey, you know, that's behind us. They basically just ignored it. So after the communication problem, there was, you know, there was actually no more communication between the ATC and Delta Flight 954. And, you know, leaving Delta 954 in a very, very dangerous spot. Meanwhile, North Central Airlines Flight 75 had just taxied down that same north-south taxiway and was going to runway 27 left, where they were told to hold. Now, if you actually look at the diagram, you'll see that where Delta was taxiing crossed runway 27 left. And because air traffic control didn't know, they had no idea that Delta was there and that they were also using the north-south taxiway. They were basically being set up for this catastrophe. The Delta plane was about halfway down of the runway itself. So at 5:59 p.m., North Central 575 was given clearance to take off, and they started barreling down the runway, basically a few seconds later at 6 p.m. They managed to get up to 140 knots, which is right around the DC-9 takeoff speed, and that's when they actually spotted the Delta flight. They saw it right in front of them. The North Central captain saw that Delta flight and instructed his first officer to help pull up. They were trying to basically lift the DC-9 over the Delta Corvair. Unfortunately, it was much too late to pull off the maneuver, even though they were at takeoff speed. The North Central Airline plane struck the Delta plane, tearing off part of the Corvair's left wing, the vertical stabilizer, and opened up three huge gouges in the skin of the Delta plane. Meanwhile, the DC-9 from North Central Air lost part of their landing gear before basically succumbing back to gravity and the whole stumble and thudded back onto the runway. The plane skidded for a while on its belly and continued on down the runway 27 left, then left the runway across a grassy area and onto runway 32 left. So, big accident. So here's the aftermath. Fortunately, the Delta plane came out actually relatively unscathed. Now, here's something. The reports actually say it took about 5 minutes to evacuate the Delta plane. Now, to me, that sounds way too long. If you heard about the Air France A340 crash in Toronto a few years back, you know that that plane had more than three times as many people on it when they landed in Toronto, and they all got out in less than 90 seconds. The good thing about the Delta plane is that there were only two injuries. Even though that plane sustained quite a bit of damage, there were only two injuries from the entire population of the people on that plane, although there was really substantial damage. The North Central DC-9 was just not as lucky. First of all, it took 2 minutes to uncover that something had actually happened to the plane, so emergency responders actually didn't get there until 3 minutes after the crash. There were multiple units on the scene, about 11 different firefighting and rescue units, and it took 15 minutes to extinguish the fire, which had started just after the plane had crashed back into the ground. The bad thing is, of all the passengers on that North Central DC-9, almost one quarter of them died. Now, the NTSB report on the fate of the 10 people who died is somewhat remarkable. Though the plane was on fire when it finally came to a stop, only five of the people were actually still in their seats when they died. One of those people was actually an invalid and couldn't walk on their own. The other four people, so none of those five people had gotten out of their seats. There were four other people who actually made it out of their seats. Two of them were found in the cockpit area, and two of them were found near an overwing exit that was unfortunately still closed. Not all of the exits on the plane were actually used. Those nine people right there died because of the crash. The last person, because there were 10 people that died of all the passengers, actually succumbed to their injuries later after the accident. It's something to think about here. None of these people actually died because of the crash. Rather, they died as a result of the injuries due to the fire and smoke inhalation. They all survived. Every single person on that DC-9 survived the crash. They survived the initial impact, but they died later because of the fire or because of smoke. So, what came out of this horrible incident in Chicago? One thing I know, it's really useful, that came out of this, it's a direct result of this, is that escape path lighting in airplanes. Can you imagine being one of those four people who actually, you know, survived and actually made it out of their seats? Can you imagine being so disoriented that you can't find your way out because the cabin is filled with smoke and it's dark? You just can't find your way out? Well, in the DC-9, passengers actually who were interviewed after the crash said that even though there was supposed to be some emergency lighting, there wasn't any, or what was there wasn't visible enough. Another issue was that North Central Airlines actually had never trained their employees under simulated disaster-like conditions. That's, of course, this was, you know, back in 1972, so that right there, you know, tells you a little bit of something. You wouldn't see that today, at least, you know, on carriers in the United States. Every carrier trains their people to get people out of airplanes in, you know, simulated disaster-like conditions. If you've ever been at an airport, you'll actually see even airport evacuations. You'll see a model airplane that looks like it's been on fire. And, you know, that's so the airport themselves can go through and do routine disaster training for their own people. Weather was also a factor of this. It was, like I said, that the planes basically crashed right at 6 p.m. And at about, you know, 6:17 or so, the fire was finally put out. Well, it was actually not until 6:28 that those people who were fighting the fire, all the rescuers, actually realized that there was another plane involved in the crash, and it was actually nearby. Now, if you're familiar with the Tenerife podcast that I did early on, I believe it's podcast 2 or 3, you'll actually recognize this very similar thing. It was something that happened very, very similar in the Tenerife disaster, where at first they only thought one 747 was involved, when actually there were two 747s involved. So that crash itself would happen a few years after this. So something substantial that actually came out of this crash was improved visual guidance for the passengers. Like I said, in a dark and smoke-filled cabin, there are special lights or lighting or glow-in-the-dark leads in the floor that actually will lead you to an exit. That's actually part of the standard emergency procedures. Now, that safety briefing that, you know, a lot of people just ignore, they actually tell you and show you where the exits are in the airplane. And that is a direct result of this crash. So this crash lives on in, and we pay honor to the victims of this crash every single time we get on a plane. The last thing to come out of this crash was not only to have the aircraft report their position when they land to air traffic control, but also for air traffic control to read back that position back to the airline so that both the airline, the airplane itself, and air traffic control, so they both know exactly where in, you know, where on the airport grounds that airplane is. That way, hopefully, ATC doesn't set up another disaster. As a little side note here, if you've ever flown through Dallas-Fort Worth and you're lucky enough to sit on a window, you'll actually see that there are lights that go down a runway, and those lights will turn different colors. If there's a plane across a runway, even if you can't see that plane because of fog or whatever, the lights on the runway glow red, which tells the pilot they cannot go. So that's technology that I, you know, hopefully one day will be employed throughout every airport in the world. So there you have it. The collision of Delta Flight 954 and North Central Airlines Flight 575. I wanted to do a little podcast here before iTunes basically takes their services down. Like I said, I'm recording this on the morning of Friday, December 20th, 2013, and you're not allowed to submit any more podcasts between December 21st and basically the end of the year due to some internal stuff that's going on with iTunes. So wanted to try and get this one out here, especially, you know, one on the anniversary of the actual incident. And speaking of anniversaries, tomorrow, December 21st, 2013, will actually be the 25th anniversary of the Pan Am Flight 103, also known as the Lockerbie, Scotland bombing. That will have happened 25 years ago tomorrow. So keep, you know, keep the victims and their families in your thoughts. So that's it. If you have suggestions on what catastrophe you'd like to see covered, please let us know. There's lots of different options that you have to get a hold of us. First off, you can go to our website, catastrophecast.com. At the top of that page, you'll see a link that says, "What do you want to hear?" Click on that link, leave us a comment, and I'll respond to you. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm trying to have an increased Twitter presence, so our handle on Twitter is @CatastropheCast, or the plain old email way, you can email me at podcast@catastrophecast.com. Thanks for listening.